We acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. This is Cheryl from Djadjawarong country.
Hello everyone and welcome to episode 111 of Beyond 90, the podcast. My name is Cheryl Downs. My pronouns are she, her, and I've got a great gang of people here tonight. We've got a couple of people sitting on the bench as well on the side. Stefan's not going to join us tonight, nor Madge, so we wish them both well in their bench sitting endeavours. But what I do have on the team tonight is we've got Dale Roots, Lockie France and Eric Subihano. So welcome all of you guys. Tell us how your week's been so far, given it's Monday.
It's been good.
The three of us got a beer last night, so that was pretty productive.
We did, yes.
Big shout out to the Forest Lodge Hotel for their outstanding hospitality and fantastic choice of craft beer. But pretty good weekend of NPL in New South Wales, to be perfectly honest.
That sounds like a good win. Lockie, you're happy with all of that as well. I should give you a special mention that we've got longtime friend and contributor to Beyond 90 and other places before then as well. He's going to give us a massive rundown today on College Matildas. So welcome, Lockie, to you.
Thank you. And yes, it's been a big weekend of college. It's going to be a big weekend of college every weekend this season because there's 37 players now.
Oh my goodness. Is that the highest ever?
Since I've been covering it, yes.
Okay. Well, stay tuned, everyone, as we go through College Matildas. Hopefully we don't have a 4-hour long pod. We'll try and keep it nice and short and sweet. But before we get to College Matildas, what we will talk about is our regular segment talking about the Matildas history. Cap number 111 goes to April Mann. So congratulations, April. April debuted for the Matildas in 2001 and played for the national team until 2004. I don't have a grassroots club list. I'm sorry for that, but if anyone finds it, yell out. She made 28 appearances for the Matildas and scored 18 goals in that time as a midfielder. She appeared in the 2003 Women's World Cup, which I think was in the US, gone blank for a moment. She was also in the Australian Women's National Soccer League, playing for Queensland Sting and the Western Waves. She also played in the W League, playing for Adelaide United. We did get a message from Groups as well, just a little bit about April Mann. She said, another tenacious Queenslander with plenty of skills on the ball. Her mother was the team manager for Queensland and Australia on a number of tours. So shout out to Leslie Mann. While some might think that made April's passage to the national team easier, Groobs actually thinks it made it harder, as the national coats had to have a really tight criteria to prove their worth. So shout out to Groobs, thank you for that, but also shout out to April Mann. We very, very much appreciate your contribution to the Matildas, and yeah, keep it going. Another one coming next week. The other thing I was remiss to say, 324 days until the FIFA Women's World Cup in 2023, not the under-20 version that we've seen a final of today, but 324 days, it's getting nice and close. And the final thing I probably wanted to say before we jump into special guests, because I keep forgetting it, the Matildas and A-League Women Supporters Group, which was a group that we set up a couple of years ago, has just clocked over 4,500 fans or supporters who have signed up to that group, which I think is brilliant. There's lots of people that share content in there. We always share our content in there, but there's also lots of people just talking and enjoying women's football. And I think that growth is really showcasing, to me at least, what's happening in the women's game, that more and more people are getting interested. So that's fabulous to see. Anyway, that's the news for me. Lockie, this is now, we'll just call it your segment, and I don't know if we're going to have some regular appearances with you. I don't know if we've talked about that to this point, but a little bit of history, if we can, from College Matildas. When did you start it? And we've probably talked about this in the past, but remind people, when did you start it? Why did you start it? And in that, when you first started it, how many players were there?
So I kind of dipped my toes into things in 2013, I think, was the first season I started looking around at how many Aussies were playing. It started when so Alex Huenstein and Kalia Hogg was there, and also a friend of mine at uni, his sister had just gone over. And I was already a big fan of college basketball and college football, or the American style football. And, you know, it was just kind of, well, I love women's football and I love college sports and I want to see how many Australians are in over there. And I couldn't find anything out. So I thought, well, I'll start covering them. And there was, I think, 20 in the first season in 2013. And then the first season I actually did it properly with College Matildas and a dedicated blog was in 2014. And the numbers steadily rose. So we got up from 20. We had a big jump 1 year. It got up to around the 30 mark and then it hovered around there. And then this year we're up to 37 players. So 14 true freshmen this season and only two true seniors. So I imagine we'll have more growth as if we get another big set of freshmen next year.
Awesome. That sounds great. It'd be great to get some of those players maybe on the pod sometimes. But we'll leave that for another appearance for you, Lockie, and you can maybe do an interview as well. Did Eric, Dale, did either of you have any extra questions before we say, hey, Lockie, just tell us, we're at round two or week two already, and how many weeks are there and how crazy is it already in your schedule?
Yeah. Firstly, April Mann's Junior Club, I was able to find it. So shout out to the good folk at Park Ridge Soccer Club Panthers in Brisbane's South, which was known as the Park Ridge Baptist Sporting Association when April was a young one. So there we go.
Thank you.
Completed that segment.
Teamwork. I like it.
So
yeah, I was going to say, I'm keen to see, like, I mean, in terms of your life as College Matilda's head honcho, like how many games are you watching? Are you able to watch games? I know that obviously college is covered a lot better over here than say NPL, a lot better over there than say like NPL is over here. For example, there's no disrespect to NPL TV, but obviously it's televised in the US.
You mean like, they have more than one camera?
I know.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. What would an average weekend of College Matildering look like?
So my Friday mornings especially are massively busy. Usually the games start at around 5 a.m. I'll try to catch a 7 a.m., a 9 a.m., and then an 11 a.m. or midday kickoff. So that's usually one game in each time zone. It can massively depend on which teams are playing at home and, you know, does their conference require you to buy a subscription, or is it free, or is it not even available internationally?
Is that documented all on your site as well, Lockie, for people who might want to check it out? They'll be able to find them.
It will be straight after this podcast because I put the notes together today.
Very nice.
You talk about the you know, the production, and it is kind of a double-edged sword as a lot of colleges or conferences are moving to ESPN+. Which is only available in the US. A couple of conferences do a separate international stream, but that's definitely not all of them. So I try to watch at least probably five or six games live in a weekend. It all depends on, yeah, like I said, my schedule. And then if I can pick up any highlights around the way, a lot of schools are getting better at, you know, clipping highlights. And that certainly makes it easier. And as the season goes on, you sort of learn which of the Australians are getting big minutes and try to dedicate myself to watching those games where I know an Australian's going to be, you know, getting a lot of playing time.
With the 37 Aussies, I think you said that on air. If you didn't, then it's 37 Aussies that are in there this season. How many teams are they spread across?
31.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
They saved just a little bit of work for you.
Yes. So back in the day, we had teams like Wyoming. They had five at a time. LaSalle had two for a long time. Claudia Jenkins, Alyssa Van Hoog, they were together. Nichols State used to have three for a lot of the time. So, you know, we'd have 25 players, but they'd only be spread across, you know, 15 or 16 schools. But I'm not sure if any team has more than two. Let me check. No, so yeah, five schools have, yeah, two players, but none have more than that this season. So yeah, that certainly makes it a lot more difficult. And then they're also spread out over a lot of different conferences. So you're not even getting those games where, you know, you get two teams with Aussies playing each other a lot even.
How many conferences are there in general? And then how many conferences are the Aussies spread to? Tell me if I'm asking you questions that are too difficult.
No, so there's 32 conferences overall, and the Aussies are spread across 18 of them. But I don't think any school has more than, any conference has more than three schools with Aussies in them. Okay. Oh, the Big East would have four. Yeah, but most of the time, it's, you know, it's, you know, two Aussies maybe at the same school, or two Aussies at two different schools. So yeah, not, oh, it's very spread out across the country.
I've got two more questions, and then I promise I'll probably think of more questions. But anyway, one of them was that Dale said something about head honcho. I'm under the impression that College Matildas is a passion project from one person. Do you want volunteers? Do you want to put your hand up and say, hey, if anyone's interested in college football, women's college football, give you a shout?
I mean, if you are willing to write something for College Matildas, I'd be more than happy to have the help. I do maintain lists for NCAA Division II and AIA junior college, which honestly, I don't have the time to fully invest in. I know that's, it's also a lot harder to find information, as you, you know, as you'd know from covering Australian football at various levels, you know, the further you go down, there's just fewer resources at the clubs to provide information, and the same goes for college. But honestly, if anyone wants to pitch in and write some articles or do some research or anything like that, I'd be more than happy to have the help. But at the moment, yes, for, yes, eight seasons it has been, or the ninth season now, is, it's been, yeah, just me on my own.
All right. Well, shout out to anyone out there if you're interested. I'm sure it's got a lot of joy in it and a lot of learning as well. So give them a shout. The other question I had, because a lot of this is not just a front-end website that you have, but you maintain a lot of data behind it. How do you maintain the data?
Well, I actually have a lot of experience coding in Python. So a lot of it is web scraping from the NCAA website. Apologies, NCAA, if you don't like that.
But they don't like it, many things, Lockie, so yes, but
you're not getting paid for it, so you,
oh, they're fine. They're fine.
They love people doing work for free, so
yeah, so a lot of it, yeah, is the statistics I keep are web scraping, but honestly, I'm throughout the off season, I'm checking schedule, rosters and things like that every couple of weeks, looking for new players, because schools do not always, a lot of schools don't go up with their, even with their new signings on National Signing Day. So it's just sort of, you know, there's 350 odd Division One schools, but it's a lot more than 350 rosters to check, because you've got to do some of them multiple times, or a lot of them multiple times.
Very good. All right. Thank you for humouring me and answering all of those questions. This is not a question. This is a thing to say as well. Anyone who's maybe relatively new to the podcast and hasn't heard this before, Lockie is also a whiz at FIFA world rankings. So if anyone ever wants to know what's going on before the official rankings are released, you've always got Lockie out there on Twitter, and he, you know, he may or may not tell you. I'm not demanding that he does, but he's an expert in more than one thing, and we're very pleased to have him on the pod. So I feel like I should throw to you now, Lockie, tell us what you want to tell us about the season so far, or the season in general.
Well, this season, we're just 2 weeks in, but I'm actually really excited about this season. We've already had six players find the back of the net in just 2 weeks. So Amy Sayer, who I'm sure everyone knows, you know, senior Matilda, Sydney FC star, playing for Stanford now. Claire Farrington, former Brisbane Roar defender. She's found the back of the net with a header, her second headed goal in as many seasons. Eliza Amendolia, former Western Sydney Wanderer. MacArthur Ram, Blacktown Spartan. She's playing for the University of Hawaii, and she is a two-time All-Big West selection, so All-Conference selection. So, and then Molly Ahrens, young Matilda, junior Matilda from Newcastle. She's had a couple of interrupted seasons with COVID, like just the general COVID situation and injuries. But she's playing for Texas A&M Corpus Christi, so right down on the Gulf of Mexico in Texas. And she's actually playing under an Australian coach in Craig Shaw, who's been over in the States coaching for a long time. And she has 5 assists in 2 weeks.
Wow.
No Australian got more than 2 assists last season. And generally 6 would top the charts for an Australian in the season. And she's already got 5. And then one last player who has already scored a goal is Iona Snape, former Northern Tiger and Central Coast Mariner. She's gone over to Siena College up in Albany, New York, home of the steamed hams. That's a Simpsons, okay. Famous Simpsons reference. So she's playing up there for Siena College, and she has slotted in so well. I made a point of catching a couple of her games. And then proving that the junior college route is great, not just for variety of players. Courtney Butleone, so she went to Eastern Florida State College and won a junior college national championship. And then she's moved on to the 4-year ranks, and she's at LaSalle, where Claudia Jenkins and Alyssa Van Herk both played. And she's already pitched in with 2 goals off the bench for them. So plenty of players enjoying great starts to the season.
Very nice.
I also want to mention one player, Isabel Rolly. So she's actually born in, she's raised in Las Vegas, but her mother is American, and her mother's Australian, and she spent part of her time growing up, I believe, in Newcastle. I think she played for Merriweather United. And despite being raised in America, she actually feels more committed to Australia. So I'm just putting it out there. A-League like women's that. Coaches. Yep. Or there is an Aussie that is listed as being from Las Vegas, USA, playing for the University of Oregon at the moment. So one to keep an eye on.
Hey, Lockie, another question.
Sounds like a grandparent rule superstar coming up.
I apologize for asking more questions, but in terms of, and I know that there's going to be a lot of variation between the different conferences, but at its best and maybe at its worst, how does it compare to football that we would see in Australia, whether or not that's the Dub or whether or not that's some NPL that you might be familiar with?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I mean, you get teams like the Stanford team from a couple of years ago that had Tiona Davidson and Katarina Macario and Tegan McGrady and players like that. A team that Beattie Goad was only not regularly starting, only occasionally starting for. And you'd have to say that they would compete against some A-League women's teams, probably like the lower teams. We've seen the odd college team actually come out here and play. So William and Mary, who really sit right around the middle in terms of the conference they play in, they had some success against NPL teams a few years ago. So as you go down, I think you'd find like the really lower conferences, they'd be having players come from, they do get NPL players, but as a general rule, they would be probably lower than like NPL 1 teams. But it really does run the full gamut, from almost able to compete with Dub teams through to probably your NPL 2 level, depending on which state we're talking about.
But the biggest thing I think that we've mentioned in the past is obviously like the kind of non-financial professionalism that we see from college sport, obviously due to Title IX, but also due to kind of the enormous investment that colleges in general put into their athletic programs. And I think, as you say, like, yeah, there might be some teams that that might not be able to compete on the field. But one of the things that always stands out to me whenever I watch these games is A, the countdown clock, which I despise, and B, like how physically fit and strong a lot of these American players are. And is that something that you've noticed, like the technical side of things has been improving as America kind of, I guess, opens up a little bit to playing more player or to having more players go overseas?
I do think so. I think in general, you know, a long time ago, Anson Dorrance, the, you know, the goat of college coaching, he's won 20 odd national championships with North Carolina, said, give me a sprinter and I'll turn them into a soccer player, because they're just an athlete. You know, he could just, you know, use their pace and, you know, get a winning team that way, but that doesn't fly anymore. You know, Alessia Russo played under Anson Dorrance at North Carolina, and she's definitely a lot more than an athlete. And I think a lot more college coaches are coming around to the idea that you have to have technically proficient players to win. I mean, it's like anything, you're still going, any competition, you're still going to get the odd coach who'll be happy to just lump it up and let the big, strong athlete try to do things. But it's definitely progressing more technically. And I think the international influence is definitely helping there.
That was going to be the next thing that I'm having a look. I had a look at I am having a look at last year's NCAA Div 1 tournament. And like the one thing that stands out to me is the fact that I think more than I expected is foreign players. I mean, they're definitely still in the minority and significantly so, but just looking at the goal scorers, obviously you've got Daisy Cleverley was over there at Georgetown last year. New Zealand player Ava Collins was over at St. John's, but like there's players from Jamaica, Iceland, Japan, Canada, kind of makes sense. Germany, which has a very strong youth system through its clubs, but also through kind of regional academies. And as I said, players coming from the Caribbean. So I completely get what you say about like that kind of reverse international influence of players going to the US looking not just to play, but obviously for an education as well.
Definitely. I mean, you mentioned Jamaica, you know, players like Jody Brown and even Khadijah Shaw played in college before going over to Europe. And I mean, if you look through the just through the ranks, there's players from all kinds of Caribbean nations littered throughout the ranks, D1, D2, through JUCO as well.
Mm. And a lot of those players will have, as you say, will be able to, like they might have dual nationality, so they can go over and play as Americans, but obviously then represent their country. I remember the point you make about Khadijah Shaw was that the Jamaican coach at the last World Cup said that they specifically spent time trying to get these Jamaican players to go to American colleges because they'd be able to get in there on scholarships as athletes. So obviously if that's, obviously Bunny Shaw is probably the best example, but if these smaller Caribbean nations are able to do that, then I mean, kind of everybody wins in that sense. Some of these places are definitely made up though. I'm looking through some of the college names and I feel like there should be a better naming convention.
Yes.
Some of these places aren't. Pepperdine, that's not real.
That's real.
I've been to Pepperdine University.
Wake Forest, don't think that's a real forest. Very confusing.
Wake Forest University isn't even in the town of Wake Forest anymore. It's in Winston-Salem.
Well, I mean, a place well known for its athletic capabilities, Winston-Salem. But yeah, I always love. And the other thing, obviously, American college sport is lots of fun if you're a follower of it. But just like the different conferences changing every year, the Big Ten not actually having 10 teams in it.
Yes.
The Big 12 having like 45 teams. I don't know. It's all very confusing. I'm glad that there's somebody out there taking care of it that has much more brain space than me to do so.
I think even I find it confusing sometimes.
If you're looking for people to maybe get involved or maybe not get involved, but get excited about College Matildas and college football in general, how would you sell it? You know, who's the biggest player that you've seen in there? And we've seen lots of people go through the system, but they might not have, you know, really reached that peak throughout their college career. Like who's been one of the most exciting players that you've seen playing in there? Not only, not only Australian players.
Oh, well, I mean, Lindsay Horan and Jaden Shaw now and a couple of other players now didn't go to college, obviously, but pretty much the entire US women's national team went to college. And I think it's obvious I'm a North Carolina fan first, but I do love Stanford University as well. And, you know, having the luxury of being able to watch Katarina Macario every week as I kept an eye on Beattie Goad was absolute must-watch football every single week. I mean, there were times when Tegan Michael was at UCLA and Stanford and UCLA had those great battles, and Rachel Lowe was there as well. And just there were weeks for a couple of years there that I'd, you know, just watch Pac-12 soccer back to back to back because there were so many amazing players to watch. I think, yeah, Macario has to be the most fun player I've watched in terms of overall. But I mean, if you look at Australians, obviously, you know, everyone knows Amy Sayer, and it's interesting. She's actually moved right up into the forward line for Stanford. So everyone knows her as a midfielder here in Australia, but she scored a brace this weekend coming off the bench. I just think she had such a good spot here in Australia and went over to Stanford and has made a great run of it over there. And I think it has been a masterstroke of a decision for her.
Very nice. Hopefully influenced by you.
Yeah, further to that point, Lockie, I think like it's Amy Sayer is, I think, the perfect example of an Australian player that should have gone to college. You know, nearly 100 ATAR, mm-hmm. extremely intelligent young woman, and now is applying her trade at Stanford. What, I'm not sure what she's studying. I feel like it's medical science or something like that.
It's a double degree, and it's like 2 degrees that would be quite the undertaking on their own.
Yeah, so. I'm having a look at it at the moment. But she is, she was on the Pac-12 academic honor roll in 2021.
Yes. So studying
human biology and philosophy. I've
yes.
Got to look at.
Yes.
So yeah, exactly. Like there's, you know, a lot of people kind of try and, rationalize players not being paid for their labor. But I mean, Amy Sayer is one who, I mean, she's as good as anybody that's going to be getting into that uni, and she just happens to be very good at soccer. So at least she's getting an education for free.
Well, the same went with Beattie Gerd. I mean, she studied medicine, I think it was, at Stanford as well. And I mean, it's, you know, we can talk about Stanford all night, and I would love to, but I think we need to recognize that players going to Stanford or UCLA or USC, where Talia Grossman is, or even Oregon, that's the exception rather than the rule. I mean, players are going to go to much smaller schools throughout. They'll go to, you know, good state schools. They'll go to really small state schools, like places like, you know, my sentimental favorite's Alabama State. There's no denying that's one of the smallest schools in NCAA Division I. So players who are looking to go to college can't get caught up in the idea that, you know, just because an Amy Sayer or a Tegan Micah or a Beattie Goad or a Rachel Lowe went to this amazing, you know, top 50 worldwide university, that's going to be the path for them as well. They, you know, there's a right fit academically and athletically for every player, but you have to find it.
Very good. What else do you want to tell us about college football?
What else? I mean,
college soccer, I suppose.
I think it's worth mentioning how many of these players are coming from New South Wales. And I mean, Stefan will claim Izzy Davey for ACT, but she is from technically over the border in Bungendore. But 17 of the 37 players are from New South Wales. And I think that is partly, we have a lot of recruiting services working out of Sydney at the moment.
Oh yes, yes.
Two of the bigger ones especially are working out of New South Wales, Upper 90 and Player Pathway USA, which I believe you guys have had on.
Yeah, Catherine before. Thompson.
Yeah, yes. Catherine Thompson. So I mean they're both doing a lot of work. So they have nearly half the players in Division I out of New South Wales.
Yeah.
Which I find very interesting.
I think that's, from what I've heard, roughly in line with women's participation numbers in this country. New South Wales has just a bit less than half of the registered women's players. Of course, that's not a perfect statistic. But Lockie, how many of those players from New South Wales have played for Northern Tigers at some point?
I think three of them, their last club was Northern Tigers.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, and then I would say there are some more. So I would say that Greta Krasiula, obviously.
Yep.
Chloe Walker at St. Francis Brooklyn. Emma Bates, originally from Newcastle. I think Eloise Jones.
Iona Snape.
Eloise Jones would have spent time at Northern Tigers as well. Not sure about some others, but yes, definitely plenty of Northern Tigers representatives over in college at the moment.
Well, that's some great news about College Matildas. Is there more that you want to tell us, or are we going to drag you into the rest of the football week as well?
I just want to make sure that everyone is aware of how much of this is available for free to watch. I mean, there are
like
certain
free things,
free food. Like it.
We like free things.
We like free things. So the Pac-12 is actually on 7+. Their national network is available on 7+. So that's so easily available, and there's 4 Aussies playing in there, and then the America East, the Western Athletic Conference, the West Coast Conference, and the Northeast Conference all have free streaming available. So that's 5 conferences with Aussies. I think that covers about 11 or 12 players that you can watch without paying. And then other conferences don't even do central streaming through the conference. So schools handle that themselves. And if you just check a team schedule, you never know what you'll find. You could find a free stream pop up for any game.
So the number one place to go is College Matildas to find all the detail, but we will try and grab some of those bits and pieces and put them in the show notes as well.
Definitely. I will definitely deliver those notes for you.
Thank you very much. No worries. Hey, another question, which is kind of on the side as well. The Women's World Cup basketball or World Championship, one of the two, starts this week, is it?
I think 3 weeks from now in Sydney.
3 weeks from now in Sydney. We're going to see you there as well.
You'll see me there.
Personally. So I think Madge and Lockie will be able to catch up there. Lockie, thank you so much for giving us a bit of an overview of College Matildas. And we'd love to have you come back on the podcast as well, talk some results of some of the key games and whatnot as well. I'm happy to keep talking about it a little bit more. Just got a little bit on the schedule to talk about as well. So either or, up to everyone else. All right, let's move on through some of the rest of the week in football. It's been a busy morning today, and I have to say I've been busy in a new job, so I've not had a chance to have a look at it. But we did have the playoff for third and fourth today in the under-20 Women's World Cup football, and we had the final in that event as well. So I didn't see the results. Anyone want to talk us through what happened?
It can't be me, but
I think it's going to be Lockie.
Well, I was able to watch a bit of the final. I watched some of it in between the late kickoff of some college games. So Spain got up 3-1 in the final against Japan. Spain got off to an absolute flyer. They were up 3-0 inside 25 minutes, I think, maybe half an hour.
Yep.
Yeah. So, So Gabarro, of course, scored the first goal, as you would expect. And then I can't remember who scored the second, but it was just a ball over the top, and Japanese defense just left in her wake, just running through onto it and slotted an easy one-on-one.
Salma Paruelo. Well,
that's the one.
That's what the live score app says, and I did not get that name very pronounced.
And then a penalty for the third goal, handball. In the box, a Japanese defender just bounced up and caught her on the arm, but one that the referee sort of had to give and slotted that. And that was 3-0. But I would say Japan definitely had the better of the second half, and they did score, I think, just 2 minutes into the second half, but just couldn't find the other two goals to tie things up.
Okay. Well, it's been a wonderful tournament. I think for me as a fan, I've found it difficult to stay in touch with it just because you haven't been able to see it on a big broadcast space or something or other. I believe that was rectified towards the end to give us a little bit of football. But look, it is what it is. It's still some great teams out there playing football, and it gives you a taste. And maybe Lockie has seen some of these players go through the college football system or college soccer system as well. So you'd have some familiarity with those ones. But good result for Spain.
It would have been nice to get some more games, because once the young Matildas games finished, Greta Krasula, under 20 World Cup debut from Virginia Commonwealth University. But it would have been nice to see the knockout stages, because once the last Young Matildas game happened and then we had nothing, we were the first set of group games. So we had the rest of the group stage and then the quarterfinals, and then we didn't have anything again until the semis, and it all just sort of disappeared from the general consciousness of fans in Australia.
Yeah, way to keep people engaged.
So yeah, it would have been nice to have at least the quarterfinals as well as the semis, but having live streaming of every game would have been the ideal situation.
Yeah. All right. Well, maybe next time. Where is the next one? Anyone for under 20? Have they already announced?
Let me see. I don't think they have. It seems
like it's been announced.
Yeah, okay. I think it's a lot less than 4 years out when they make this announcement.
This World Cup was originally designed to be held in Panama and Costa Rica in 2020, but obviously it was cancelled, and then Panama couldn't hold any games. But there hasn't been, there hasn't really been kind of a skerrick of news around this.
Yeah.
FIFA have a lot on their plate at the moment, to be honest.
They do. Some of it self-inflicted, but yes, anyway. Also, the Wikipedia page for the 2024 edition does not exist, and I think that's pretty much...
Generally not a good sign when there's a red link in a Wikipedia article.
Yeah.
Well, we'll keep an eye out for when the next one is, and hopefully...
Just before we go through, Brazil, the third place playoff winners, absolutely towed the Netherlands.
They're towed.
So... good that Australia got beat by the two teams that won the final knockout game. So, that's impressive turnaround when you think about it. Like, we played super well against Costa Rica and we got beaten by two of the three best teams in the world.
Yep. And Tassian having a very all-action match for a central defender. In addition to, presumably, I assuming, knocking over every Dutch person that got anywhere near the box, but scored a penalty, missed another penalty, which was great after she missed a penalty earlier, and then scored another goal. So, making an impact at both ends.
Nice. All right, on to other news in football. I put a little bit of homework in there, actually, for me as well as for anyone else. So the 2021-2022 UEFA Women's Champions League technical report was released over the week just gone, I think it was. Really interesting reading. Get your hands on it. We've got a link in the show notes. Couple of highlights from that. So one of them was that from the technical report perspective, they've talked a lot about the high press and teams who are doing really well with a high press, how they actually fare in results was quite good. Recoveries was really important. And then the other thing that was in there was that we're back to fullbacks and speedy wingers as a structured way of playing. So I found that quite interesting. Steph Catley was recognized for a goal that she scored. She was recognized as the third best goal, I think, and Sam Kerr was recognized as the sixth best goal. So there's a link to that one in there as well. I think that originally, I think it appeared on Keep Up as well. So you can have a look at that. Steph Catley's goal was just a beautiful one. And I love to see Steph Catley goals, always one of my favorite players.
Yeah.
We talked about the under 20 Women's World Cup already. We've got another announcement. Melbourne Victory and Adelaide United have partnered for 2023 A-League's Pride Cup. So they'll be doing some back-to-back matches. I think they've announced the matches are somewhat around about in February, so I don't know what round that would be. The men are kicking off about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and then the women's match is following that around about 6 o'clock. So I think that's a great initiative. Adelaide United did it really well last season, so we'd like to see it keep on going. There's another link in the show notes in regards to the National Youth Championship draw has been released. So have a look at that one to see some of those younger players will be out there playing. That's for young boys and young girls. And then the other thing that I noticed this week on the interwebs was the history of the AFC Women's Asian Cup has released a little bit of a handbook or a book or a brochure or whatever you want to have a look at. So maybe just a little bit of reading for people there if they're so inclined.
So will we find the Western Australian team in there? Yes, I've just found it. Western Australia finishing
an oft overlooked part of Australian football history.
Yes,
that's been recognised.
Then making a third place playoff against Hong Kong, and then the match didn't take place.
And then just not turning, the opposition just not turning up. Also a big fan of the teams in the, I'm just having a look at the National Youth Championships. We have the two, ooh, yes, the two parts of New South Wales, New South Wales Country and New South Wales White.
Yes.
Very good naming conventions. Play yes. Football New South Wales here. I like it a lot.
Yeah, and then Northern New South Wales, that's a separate state fed. So
yeah, that's a completely different state.
And also
South Australia having two teams in the 16s. I did not expect that. Queensland as well have two teams. Nah.
New South Wales should have,
as well. Yeah. I like this.
Yes. New South Wales should have done what the naming conventions they use for the futsal national champs, Thunder and Lightning.
Yeah. That's good. I mean, as somebody who would be playing for New South Wales Country if I was an elite rugby league player and that team still existed. New South Wales City. Come on. We can have that, you know. Yes.
I mean, in basketball, we just do Metro and Country.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they do in the AFL as well. Victoria Metro and Victoria Country as well. It's not too much to ask, I feel. Yeah, come on, Football New South Wales. Yeah. Again, another place that has a lot on its plate at the moment.
Yes. But mostly trying to keep commentators happy. I think that's their biggest problem at the moment.
Hopefully that's not too hard, but anyway, just a good container to stand on top of or something or other and some good food at the venue.
Maybe it's the other commentators.
Fair enough. In other news, we've got A-League officials have been announced. So you can see the men and women who've been announced to referee or assistant referee or VAR, as everyone loves. So shout out to Kate Jackowitz. We see her in there again. She's also been at the Under 20 Women's World Cup doing VAR work there. So it's great to see some of the longevity of some of the match officials there. So there's a link provided for people to have a look at. And then on to signings for the week. So hopefully, I haven't done any updates today, actually, but hopefully it's a little bit up to date with Brisbane Roar signing Georgia Beaumont. And Western United have had the biggest movement, I think, in the week, apart from today, if there's anything that's happened. So Emma Robers and Julia Sato have both signed with them. That was kind of almost old news because it had been in there for a little while. And I think late in the week, Alexandra Sinclair, who is Cordy United's one of their big, very popular and potentially their captain, has signed with Western United as well. So we've got a bit of a summary table in the show notes that you could see, but Western United are now up to 9 players. They're looking pretty fit, looking pretty good, and not too much movement anywhere else. Brisbane Roar already also signed 1 player, so they're up to 9 as well.
New South Wales team's absolutely flying with a combined number of 0.
Yep.
Oh, well done.
Go New South Wales. And then, which will be, as I say every week, and that'll become 18 when Sydney FC bother to do their announcement.
Yeah. They just drop one list as they every year.
Here are all of our players. Do not send any inquiries to our media team.
Please. Yes. And then it's just a link to the Sydney Olympic squad list. But anyway.
Thank you. As usual, we're running a little bit light on time. So does anyone want to catch us up on some stuff that's happening around the world? I'll let you have one go each, maybe, or a little bit more than a go each if you want. Dale, did you want to kick us off with an interesting piece from there?
I think one was, there was a 1v2 between Portland and San Diego in the National Women's Soccer League in the US. 2-0 to San Diego away from home. The other match there was a 4-0 win to Chelsea Dorber's Chicago Red Stars over Racing Louisville, featuring Alex Chidiak. Full game for Emily Van Egmond for San Diego. Unfortunately, not for Chelsea Dorber at Chicago Red Stars. But that San Diego v Portland, I think we'll probably be seeing that in a couple of, when the playoffs come around.
How about you, Eric? Some big news across the world that you'd like to share?
Jacinta Galabarachi coming off the bench on the 55th minute and just getting a casual 2 goals for Celtic, who beat Motherwell 8-0. TJ Vlinic scored 8 minutes into her debut for Spartak Subotica in Serbia. And the fellow lost Aussie Vesna Milivojevic was played as well. TJ and Vesna, I don't think they played in their next in Spartak's second game, because they played these 2 games, 3 games apart, where Spartak Subotica just putting the lazy 14 goals past Zvezda B 2018. So, yeah, there seems to be a bit of a competitive imbalance in the Serbian Women's Super League. And then What else? What's the most interesting thing from the Nordic? I'm trying not to pick Denmark because it's me. Oh, yeah, more game time for Elise Kellen Knight, 61 minutes as Hammarby beat Emma Checkers Umeå 3-0. So there's also 61 minutes for Courtney Nevin and a full game for Kyra Cooney Cross. What do we have? Matilda McNamara started all of AGF's first five games. So they're AGF yet to win in the league, but they've won two cup games. And let's see. I think that's pretty much it. So, of course, Stefan and I will cover that, the Nordic stuff, in the next Nordic Wrap.
Nice. What about for you, Lockie? Is there a league outside of, I mean, given how busy you are doing College Matildas, is there a league around the world that women's league that you love to keep an eye on as well?
Generally, I'm just, well, Eric stole my Celtic thing with Jacinta.
So. Oh, I'm sorry. I've
got my Celtic pennant on the wall. Well, no, actually, I've been really busy with college. This is going back to a little bit, but I just want to mention that Amy Sayer and Stanford actually played against the Chinese national team last weekend, and they got up 1-0. So obviously not a full strength Chinese national team, but still that's something that they can definitely hang their hat on.
Very nice. All right. And then I have a bit of a look around for me. I think for me, I'm really happy. I talked about it last podcast about Kyra Cooney Cross getting some good game time, and then she was announced player of the match or something or other. So I'm sure I didn't help her whatsoever, but it's good seeing her getting lots of game time. We did see, and I think there was an injury to Hayley Razzo. So the squad for the Matildas, the upcoming match for the Matildas against Canada, has changed a little bit with Princess Sabini coming into the squad at the expense of with Hayley Razzo going out. So not good for Hayley, but really good for Princess Sabini. So that's kind of the one thing that I would call out. We've gotten to the point of really getting to the end of the NPL.
Sorry, Cheryl, I just saw something. This wouldn't have been missed if Stefan hadn't chickened out of going onto the pod tonight. I know he's going to listen, so hopefully this winds him up to get on next time and cover his territory properly. I've just noticed Michelle Heyman just scored 5 goals in her last 2 games. So that was 2 on Thursday in a 6-2 loss for Kurgan Garland against Belconnen United.
And see, that's what happened.
And then scoring Stefan a hat-trick in Kundalini United, 6-1 in over Togrenong, a game that Stefan will watch. See, this is what happened. He said he didn't want, I tried to get him on the pod, and now I'm going to smash him while we're recording, because really, that's not my job, Stefan. That's your job.
Poor Stefan.
Don't worry, Stefan. I will give you the good news that Annalise Grove started both games this week for UMBC and has been a regular fixture in the starting lineup for them for both weeks.
Very nice. All right. Let's, because we are moving along a little bit, let's go to Queens of the Week, if we don't mind. Anyone who wants to see results from the NPLW, we do still have those in our show notes. You can have a look at those there. But Queens of the Week, I'm going to start with, if it's okay, I'll start with Lockie, because I'm worried that Eric might steal something from Lockie.
He's not going to steal anything from me this week, because it's going to be a college player.
this isn't one of Lockie's players. This is very on brand for me.
Go for it. Go for it, Lockie.
Oh, okay. So I mentioned her earlier, but I think my queen of the week has to be Molly Ahrens, with just how well she's come back from such an interrupted first couple of years to her college career. She's had a goal. She had 3 assists over the weekend, and she's just doing so well for Texas A&M Corpus Christi. When she first signed, I had a couple of people messaging me saying she's going to be a top 5 player in the league as soon as she, you know, gets started. And finally, she's had the opportunity to actually demonstrate just how good she is.
Very nice. What about you, Dale?
My queens of the week are the MacArthur Rams women's side. Super, super impressed with the way that they played against Uni last night. Keep an eye out for my write-up. As we mentioned, it was the game that we were all out at Camperdown it was pretty nice conditions. Was super impressed with the way that they played. We're recording this on a Monday night. Uni could probably be there for another week and they wouldn't have scored. They were really comprehensively shut down by a pretty impressive Rams team. And special shout out to Stephen Peters, the club's head coach, for coming and having a beer with Lockie and Eric after trying to get a mention on the NPL pod. If he listens to
another
this
pod
one,
that I written,
maybe he should get a mention on this one as well. So I feel that's only fair.
Thank you. Eric, how about you?
Okay, so my Queen of the Week is the Queen of Right Backs, Polly Doran. She's settled in really brilliantly at her new team, Crystal Palace, in the English Championship, started both of their first two games and helped them keep two clean sheets, two games that Crystal Palace both won. I assume mainly because Polly Doran just locked down one entire half of the field. That's right. And I've already sent you a really great photo of Crystal Palace's kit, which, by the way, this year, it's hard to mess up Crystal Palace's colours, but they've done an especially good job. And yeah. I need to remember to buy a customized jersey. So I might.
I think all three of their jerseys this year are fantastic from what I've seen. So if you'd like to splash your cash, there's probably a good way to stimulate the economy.
Yep. Thank you. I mean, it's not our economy, but it's the British economy. They need it as well, to be fair. Yeah.
Thank you. To anyone who's not aware, usually behind the scenes, Eric is crafting a way to make sure that his favorite image becomes the feature image of the podcast. So I usually comply because he's so much more organized than everyone else. So you'll probably see that one on the feature. And then finally for me, I think my queens of the week, one of them, look, I'm going to pick Kat Smith. She's put some nice social media out there about being at the Under 20 Women's World Cup as part of a coaching mentoring platform that's been part of FIFA. So I think big kudos to Kat Smith, who's had a big journey in football. She's been around for a while. She's coached Alamein at NPLW level in Victoria. She's been an assistant coach at Melbourne Victory. She's going to start her season with the Western Sydney Wanderers this year with, I think, Tom Samani is her mentor as well.
TD, head of football, head of women's football, technical directorish role, I think, is it? But definitely helping her out.
Big, big shout out to Kat Smith. She's also been on the podcast, I'm pretty sure. So I don't know our chances of getting her on again. And then the other person I was going to call out was Alexandra Sinclair, who is a big fixture as part of women's football in Victoria. So it's really exciting to see her go and join Western United. I think it's going to be a really exciting team to watch when the season kicks off. I don't know how they'll go, but I think they're doing a really good job in picking, you know, Calder United players, which Mark Torcaso, the head coach, is probably pretty familiar with as well. Yeah. But yeah, anyway, that's my queen.
I saw Mark Torcaso at Football New South Wales headquarters a couple of months ago, so he's definitely not just looking in Victoria. So as we saw with Western United signing Carly Johnson from Sydney's Northern Beaches, we know they're going to sign a lot of Calder United players because they're the premiers, but there'll be some others.
Yep, very happy for him to steal from anywhere he needs to steal. Bring more good players down to Melbourne and Victoria. That's good. Well, on behalf of myself, I'd like to thank the Beyond 90 team who are on the podcast tonight. A very special thank you to Lockie France, who's been on the podcast with us as well. It's been really enjoyable to hear all about College Matildas and just football from your perspective in general. And thank you to everyone who's listened to us. If you like the podcast, please either subscribe to it or leave us a review. It gives us some, you know, some positive, nice vibes and stuff. We do enjoy that. We will talk to you again next week when we get up to episode 112. We'll also have a wrap on the first game between the Australian team against Canada, which will be really exciting to see. So that one's in Brisbane on Saturday at around about 2:45. I know that I'm flying up from Melbourne to go and watch the game, and there'll be a few of us up there. And then another game following on from that on Tuesday in Sydney. Hopefully, I don't know if tickets are sold out yet. So
there's definitely tickets available. If you are going to either of the venues, the Lord Alfred Hotel is where the Matildas Active are having their do. It's on the corner of Caxton Street, the top corner of Caxton Street. Go and check them out. I do believe they are also having a do in Sydney as well. So pop your head in and say good day. You know, that way you can see us in real life.
Oh, that sounds like a threat. I'm not sure.
That comes and says good day and says they listen to the podcast, I'll buy you a beer.
That's a dangerous promise.
Spread up far and wide on social media. I'm sure there's a limit on the bar. All right. Well, thank you everyone for listening into the podcast, and we'll talk to you again next week. See you later.